All right. Well, welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for attending, taking time out of your day for this important conversation. We're so excited to have our panelists, people from all over the country joining this conversation. This is Keeping Our Community Safe, Local Actions to Address Gun Violence. We're going to set some reminders just for you all. Just a reminder that this session is being recorded. So we're going to release this at a later date if you wanted to share this with someone in your network or wanted to revisit this conversation. Closed captioning is available using the CC box at the bottom of your screen. We also have ASL interpreters joining us today that we're going to spotlight. So thank you for joining us. And we'd like for you to utilize the chat. Just make sure that your chat is set to everyone so that everyone can see what you're sharing with the group. If you have any questions for our speakers, we have that handy Q&A box at the bottom of our screens. And we will try to get to as many of your questions as possible. If not, we'll leave contact information for you guys to get in contact with us for any specific questions. Last but not least, there's going to be an opportunity for you to fill out a 3-minute survey that really, really helps us improve our programming for the future. We would love for you to participate in that. We'll drop the link. Miriam's going to post that survey link in the chat for you to bookmark and take at your leisure or right following the webinar. And that would really, really help us. So thank you so much. All right, let's get to our agenda. So today we're going to be meeting with our incredible speakers. We're going to spend the majority of the time tackling some questions, and then we're going to open it up to you, the audience, for any of your questions that you'd like answered specifically. We are going to meet our speakers, have that great discussion, and then we're going to leave you with some takeaway action items and skills. And then we're going to be following that up with next steps. How do you stay engaged with Sheesh Run and also your local community moving forward? So with that, I'm going to hand it over to our CEO and founder, Aaron Loz-Cotraro, to talk about Sheesh Run and our issues.
Excellent. Thank you, Amanda. And thank you, everyone, for being here today. I am incredibly grateful for the essential conversation that we'll have. To kick us off, I wanted to just tell you a little bit about Sheesh Run. We're a national nonpartisan organization that is working to help women see their potential in elected office. And unlike many of the amazing traditional political organizations you probably know that help active candidates, Sheesh Run's target audience are women who are from all walks of life, who care about issues and making their communities better, but who haven't explored their own path to elected office just yet. And because our work is finding the women who aren't looking for us, we do our work by partnering often with great organizations, community foundations, corporations, and other entities that have large built-in audiences of women. Once the women get to Sheesh Run, then we offer programming that helps them get centered in their own fire in the belly. Like, we all need that, right? Helping them get better connected to how they can get lean more into getting engaged civically in their communities. And then we demystify all of those amazing resources that do and will exist when a woman decides to make the decision to run. So just helping to navigate so that you can kind of see around the corner what will be there to support you when you make that decision. And we're hopeful that it's something you'll consider. So we're a safe space for women from all walks of life to be able to peek behind the curtain on what it looks like to run for office, to lead in office. And to date, we have brought over 40,000 new women to the table of possibility, which is well on our way to our bigger goal of seeing 250,000 new women step up to the plate by 2030. So if you're interested in learning more about how to channel what is your own life experience into what could be elected leadership or maybe just getting more engaged, I encourage you to join our community. Miriam is going to post the link to our community in the chat. And with that, I'd like to turn the tables and learn a little bit more about you. We're going to pop up a poll that's going to help us understand who's joining us today. You'll see a question there with, I think, real-time results. I'll give you just a minute to answer, if you wouldn't mind answering our poll question. Fun fact, this is a question that we ask everybody who joins the She Should Run community. It's something that we talk about as mindset. And often the women that we are working with are very early in the stage, haven't considered it, but maybe want to run someday, and that's great. That's not to say that we might have some folks here that are currently considering it too. I'll give you just a minute. Okay, great. Hopefully you can see the results pop up on the screen there. It's always fun to see. So we've had some folks here. It looks like the bulk of you have put some thought towards running for office. That doesn't mean you'll necessarily do it. And that is okay too. We just want you to actually think about it. And we're grateful that you're here today thinking about it through the lens of an issue that's incredibly important. So with that, let me briefly tell you why we're here today talking about this incredibly important topic of gun violence. This is new territory for She Should Run, in that we set out to find women who aren't necessarily looking for us. And in order to do that effectively, we have done a deep dive. And last year specifically, I did a deep dive on comprehensive research around the motivators to get more women to think about running for office. So the field as a whole knows a whole heck of a lot about why women don't run, but there's actually very little known about what will move a woman to actually consider a run for office if she's not already thinking about it. Because women aren't a monolith, and because we care deeply about building a pipeline of women who are fully representative of the great diversity of this country, the research results that we got were thick. They were nuanced, really capturing women from all different backgrounds and perspectives and how we can reach them. But there was one through line that was really important, and that is what brings us here today, which is that if we want to reach women who are not already thinking about running for office, we need to lean into the conversations that they're already having about issues that matter most to them. And so with that information, we then went to experts in the field from organizations like YWCA and UN Women to understand what issues are top of mind. And that is where you see these five issues that are on the screen. So climate change and reproductive health and economy and racism, and of course the issue that we're talking about today around gun violence. So Miriam will post a link to our report that we did in case you want to know more, our group chats report on why issues for us. The bottom line is that if we want to see meaningful change on issues that matter to us, we need more women at the table influencing policy on these issues. So let's dive into a conversation about this particular issue and why it's as important as we all know it is. So there is no debate around the reality that gun violence is a national crisis. I am going to share some overall statistics some of you may be familiar with. I'm sure some of our speakers will speak from experience of their organizations and individual ways that they're influencing for the better this issue. Know that, and we always get this question, know that we will share after the event webinar notes, kind of sourcing a lot of what we're talking about, as well as a recording of this conversation that members of our community will have access to for 30 days after this event. So let's get into it. The statistics are quite staggering. So far this year, we've seen more than 200 mass shootings in the United States, putting this year, 2023, on track to be the worst in recent history. Every year, there are more than 37,000 people killed with guns. Guns are the number one killer of children and teens in America. And nearly two-thirds of intimate partner homicides in the United States are committed with a gun. What also something that's notable to call attention to when we're talking about this issue is that there are more than 1 million women in the United States alive today who have reported being shot at or by an intimate partner. And you know, women in the United States are more than 11 times more likely to be killed with a gun than women in other high-income countries. These statistics are heavy and can be hard to digest. There is hope. The majority of Americans agree that we want stricter gun laws, and they're concerned. They know this issue is something that needs to be tackled. And, you know, even a Fox News poll in the, you know, I think it was just a month or two ago, found that individuals would prefer focusing on gun safety measures rather than this thing that you sometimes hear come up, which is, you know, arming individuals as a solution to gun violence. So, you know, with the majority of Americans on the same page about that urgent need to address gun violence, we're here today to shift the focus on how, from how, a conversation about how we're going to get this done to who is going to do it. So with that, and just before I bring on our amazing panelists, we have one more poll for you. You know, recognizing that gun violence is this horrible and unacceptable daily consequence. That's a reality. It's a reality for far too many Americans. We're curious to know, for anyone who is comfortable sharing in this poll, what your experience is. You can feel free, by the way, to select more than one. And if you feel like you're not, your experience isn't represented here and you still want to share, you can do so in the chat. So I'll give you just a minute to reflect on that. And while you're reflecting, I do see Stephanie, thank you for posting Wear Orange tomorrow for National Gun Violence Awareness Day. I'm so grateful for you posting that. I hope that part of the conversation today are reminders of what we can do, everyone can do who is participating. Okay, you can see that the majority of folks today are concerned about the threat of gun violence in your community. It is very real. And you know, I just want to acknowledge here too that some folks who are part of this conversation have had personal experiences, which we just appreciate you being here and being in the conversation. So with that, and I hope that our speakers are able to sort of take that in and know a little bit more about our audience members, I want to transition to introduce our speakers. What I will do here is I'll name our speakers and then I will call on each one of you to do a quick introduction of yourselves. I always find that just hearing it from yourself is more helpful than me reading a bio. So our incredible lineup, thank you for making the time to be here today, includes Tennessee State Representative Gloria Johnson, Ariel Hobbs, who's a program coordinator at March for Our Lives, Amber Goodwin, who is the founding director of Community Justice Action Fund, and Dr. Nicole Hollywood, who is a deputy chapter leader with Maryland's chapter of Moms Demand Action. So we'll kick off by giving the floor to Representative Johnson to introduce yourself.
Hi there, everybody. Great to be here today. I'm Gloria Johnson, state representative from Knoxville, Tennessee, House District 90. I am relatively new to politics, got involved during the Obama campaign and was hooked and stayed in it. But I come from teaching. I taught special education for 27 years. And in 2008, I was teaching at Central High School in Knoxville, and we had a shooting lost a student that day. So this issue has always been critical and in the forefront for me. I have run red flag bills a couple of times. I have run safe storage laws a couple of times. And we are heading into special session August 21st. We're supposed to be discussing gun violence. I'm not sure how it's going to go. My colleagues across the aisle aren't too happy about it, but we are organizing and the young people are passionate and active. So we have hopes for August 21st.
Amazing. Thank you, Representative Johnson. And Ariel, do you want to join and introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hello. Thank you once again, She Should Run, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm Ariel Hobbs. I am a 24-year-old from, no, oh my gosh, I'm 25. I'm a 25-year-old from Houston, Texas. I currently work for March for Our Lives as our program coordinator, a part of our national organizing team. I've been involved with March for Our Lives pretty much since the very beginning in 2018 when I helped, along with a bunch of my colleagues, helped plan the march in Houston, which, pat on my back, ended up being one of the largest, no, the largest demonstration in the city of Houston's history. So shout out to us. We did a lot in a month. And yeah, ever since then, I've been really involved with the gun violence prevention space in a volunteer and professional capacity with March for Our Lives, and also in a volunteer capacity around my community in Houston. And so as a Black woman, which that demographic kind of falls at the center of the most impacted group by gun violence, I'm just really passionate about this issue and speaking for young people, young women, young people of color, women of color, and really trying to raise the roof and raise it to the mountaintops and hopefully get people to understand just how big of a crisis this really is.
Incredible. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. Why don't we go to Amber?
Hi, everyone. My name is Amber Goodwin. My pronouns are she, hers, and I am right up the road from Ariel. I'm in Austin, Texas. I come to this space kind of wearing two hats. I serve as an assistant district attorney here in Travis County in Austin, and so I work on our special victims unit. So work on gun violence, interpersonal violence, and also our city and county gun violence prevention work. But I'm also the founder of the Community Justice Action Fund, which is an organization that was started 7 years ago next week. And prior to that, I was the advocacy director for Gabby Giffords and Giffords Organization. And so when I started working on gun violence almost a decade ago, I was working on a lot of different bills. And I started, even though I'm from Texas, I never really have been around guns before. So I was kind of like, this is somebody else's issue over there. And then the Charleston shooting happened and I saw, you know, the impact of people who look just like me, that look like Ariel, that look like so much of us, so many of us on this screen. And so went around the country. And as Representative Johnson, I'm also a background in organizing. So I organized myself into a job of starting an organization that specifically is working on gun violence at the intersection of gun violence, race, gender, and different issues like that, and specifically in communities of color. So working on things like community violence intervention. And so that's the work that Community Justice Action Fund does. And so I'm just so honored and excited to be here today. So thank you, because I know what everyone in the chat has been talking about is Gun Violence Awareness Month. And so I cannot imagine a better group of people to be working on. And I just have to fangirl about Representative Johnson, because not only because of everything you've done, but also because my mom was a special ed teacher also. She was a special ed teacher for 45 years. So thank you for all the work that you did as a teacher as well.
Incredible. And here, Nicole.
Hi, yes, I'm Nicole Hollywood. I live in Salisbury, Maryland. In my day job, I'm a college professor, and I'm also the deputy chapter lead of Maryland Moms Demand Action. I want to thank everyone that mentioned Wear Orange, because we are going into Wear Orange Weekend starting tomorrow, which is National Gun Violence Awareness Weekend. So we wear the color orange, which is the same color that hunters wear to not get shot by other hunters, to raise awareness to the national epidemic of gun violence.
Absolutely. Thank you, Nicole. Well, what an incredible conversation we will have here. Let's get right into it. And I want to acknowledge that I know some of you, and I appreciate our sharing your stories in the chat, please, please feel free to do that and know that it's being seen, even if we're not addressing it in our conversation directly. I appreciate each and every one of you. So I'll kick us off with a question that anyone can jump in on. I'll ask Representative Johnson, you first. You know, with all of the issues that we talk about as an organization, but I think with gun violence specifically, there is such an incredible, incredibly well-funded industry that you have to battle in your work around addressing gun violence, and that is the well-funded gun lobby. I am curious, how do you in your work as a state representative, how do you feel your way through and push your way through knowing that change is happening when there is such a big push in the opposite direction? What do you hold on to wins? How do you do it?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because it's tough, especially the day that we went to the well, the three of us went to the well because we felt we needed to speak. Out in the rotunda and out on the legislative plaza, thousands of people, and it was parents and it was students. And these people were passionate about this issue and took off work, showed up, they had their toddlers on their shoulders. They wanted us to talk about this issue and do something. And my colleagues, I went early so I could talk with people and hear what they had to say. My colleagues literally walked onto the House floor and didn't even make eye contact with them. And there are thousands of them. And then over off up in the gallery, you see several of the lobbyists from the Tennessee Firearms Association. And we know that there are Covenant families present that day in the rotunda and all around the Capitol. And they had on pins that were AR-15 pins. And it's so disrespectful to those parents and those families and those children. It is difficult up there, but what they are seeing, even though the elected supermajority is ignoring that 70 to 80% of Tennesseans in all counties, rural counties included, want gun sense legislation. But it was sort of powerful to see the thousands who wanted change and then four or five in their fancy suits with those pins on that are the ones stopping this from happening. And the way that we will get them to come around is those people may give them campaign donations and may endorse them in a campaign, but there's a whole lot of Tennesseans who will no longer vote for them if they don't do something different. And so we have to show them by showing up, them seeing us and seeing us stand up, that there's a change happening. They are ignoring the will of even their voters. And they need to step up and keep our kids safe and our community safe and do what is right and do what the majority of all parties are demanding.
Oh, yes. Thank you for your leadership there and for sharing. You know, something that, and Amber, I want to turn to you. Something that's striking to me is just hearing you say, you know, in addition to the numbers being on your side, of knowing that, you know, it is the will of the people to do something about this, to take action about this, the showing up in person matters. This being counted in the room matters. Amber, I'm curious your experience with this, you know, knowing that it is so hard to affect change for this, what is it that you hold on to that feels like the, you know, the sign that you're moving in the right direction?
Yeah, I mean, I'll answer that question. I also just want to put into a little bit of context too, because this issue is so big. And so sometimes somebody will be out, like one day at work, I'll be talking about the gun lobby. And then the next day I'll be talking about like suicide prevention. And then the next day I'll be talking about something else. So I also just wanted to say, just, and you talked about some of these numbers, but we, and a lot of us in the gun violence movement kind of think about gun violence in like a couple of buckets, you know, around 40,000 people, more than that usually these years, are shot and killed. And that's just the number of people that we actually know. And out of those around 40,000 people, there's about 100,000 plus that are shot and survive. So that's an additional hundreds of thousands of people and communities that are impacted. But when we look at the lion's share of violence and gun violence in our country, about 2/3 every year are firearm suicides. And that's like getting higher and higher and higher. In our communities, especially communities of color, it's younger people that are using firearms as the weapon of choice being a firearm. And then the domestic violence is just a huge part of gun violence as well. And so a lot of these solutions that we talk about are not only based in like, you know, we're not making them up, we're basing them in evidence. And so a lot of what the representative's talking about, and I think everybody else on here, we all agree on, is that we have not only facts, as into saying like, we have a problem in America when 40,000 people that we know of are being shot and killed every single year. But when we look at the disproportionate or disparate impact of gun violence, it is in low-income neighborhoods, it is in Black communities, it is Black women, it is Black men. Black people make up 13 to 14% of the population, but whenever we look at that 40,000 people who are killed every year, when it's the homicides, we're 60 to 70% of all of the homicides. So I'm saying all that to say that they're not only we need to have the messaging of like, this is impacting people, it's impacting everybody, because it impacts us when we see it on the news, it impacts our kids, it impacts our communities. But there's also the disproportionate impact that I think is really important to talk about when we say like, why do we show up? Because it's affecting people in different ways, but it's impacting all of us, if that makes sense. It's just, it's impacting our day-to-day lives. And so I think the showing up is really important. And back to what happened in Tennessee and what we've seen around the country, I think when I got started on gun violence, everyone was just so focused on Congress. They were like, everything has to happen in Congress. If it doesn't happen in Congress, and if it's not a background check bill, it is not, you're not doing anything. And we were like, hold on. So there's other people who may have a responsibility here too. And so that's what was so incredible about what happened with Representative Johnson and her colleagues, is that the world got to really see that there is skin in the game and there is an accountability of what's happening in these state houses across the country, whether it's a special session, whether it's regular session, whether it's a mayor's office. I work for the district attorney's office, whether we all have a shared responsibility. And so I think really messaging it and giving evidence and facts of what's actually happening in our community. And for those of us that have, I say I have the unearned privilege of I've never been shot myself. No one in my immediate family has been shot. And that's just, I didn't do anything for that to happen. It just is the way my life has been. And so it is also our responsibility to not just put this on survivors and people who have been impacted directly to bear the brunt of all of this as well. So I think showing up can look different ways. And so I think that, but it's important to kind of put it in the context of, it's not just mass shootings that we see and hear about all the time. It's the everyday shootings. It's the people dying by firearm suicide. It's the people in domestic violence. It's all these different issues that people are working on. And there's so many different ways that people can show up, whether that's online or offline as well.
Yes, yes, yes to all of that. And I think too, you know, just to come back to your point of how important it is to not see this as such a big and impossible issue that you feel like you don't have a place, like you can't, what is my small role that I can play going to do? When you know in your heart what you have just said, you know how big of a problem it is, you know that it is disproportionately affecting often the most vulnerable communities. I'm curious, Ariel, I want to bring you into the conversation on this. And I don't know if you want to address that question, but would love to hear from you on, you know, in your organizing, what is it that sort of keeps you hopeful, that keeps you putting one foot in front of another?
Yeah. As many times as I've gotten this question asked, I always like take a moment and think, because this movement is ever changing, always growing, and it's hard. Last week, a few of me, myself and a few of my colleagues were in Uvalde for the 1-year anniversary of the shooting in Uvalde. So today my answer is my community. my love for my community. I have unfortunately met a lot of great and amazing people in this fight, whether they are survivors themselves, surviving families, workers, staff like me, that we're all connected by this really traumatic event. And one thing that I can speak for at March for Our Lives that we really drive home is the fact that you can't really do this work if love is not at the center of what you do, because this is not easy. Being in this fight, I've been involved with March for Our Lives since 2018. There's been a lot of hard, dark, deeply distressing moments in this work, meeting with families, meeting with survivors, talking to elected officials that I know, quite frankly, don't care about what I'm saying. You know, it's very hard, and I can't rely on the external to be my driving force. I have to have an internal driving force, and that is my love for my community. That is the fact that, like, I am so dedicated to wanting my community safe, to fighting for equity in my community, because gun violence is such an intersectional issue that I know that these are the steps that I have to take. This is the fight that I have to be in. I have to use my voice and my power and my platform in this way, because if I don't, we just become another statistic. And people use us in the fight of, well, should we do this or should we do that, when they don't really listen to the personal stories. And so I know the people, I talk to the families, I talk to the survivors, and it is those stories, their pain, my love for them, my care for them, my care for my community, my care for myself. I mean, as Representative Johnson spoke about, she's a teacher. My dad teaches fourth grade. He's been a teacher my entire life. I come from a family of educators. So I have for me, I feel like there's so many lives at stake that I can't not do what I'm doing. And so it gets hard. Like, before last year, there was no meaningful passage of gun violence prevention legislation on a federal level in almost 20 years. Like, that's not something easy when you've been doing that work for so long, like a lot of my colleagues have been. That's not easy to just say, I'm gonna wake up every day and I'm gonna do it, you know, in the face of rising levels of gun violence and this epidemic getting so out of control. It's not easy to say that, but you have to focus on the small wins. You know, you have to focus on, what are you doing in your community? What does it look like on a local level? Stop looking so big picture and looking at what's happening on a federal level, and look at what you can control. Look at how you're impacting your community, what progress is made in your community. Like, thankfully, I had a mayor in the city of Houston who, when we told him we were planning a march and we filed for the city permit, his office called us and was like, let us know exactly what you need. We are here. We are going to do it. And at that march, I'm going to let them know that I'm going to create a gun violence prevention community task force. And that was the first thing, like, that was his idea on his own. And so, you know, I have to hold on to those small wins and look at how many young people are ready to get involved in this movement. Look at how many young people are putting their truth to power and really engaging in this movement, and not waiting for other people to tell them, this is your time to stand up. They're using their power and their platforms to do what they want to do to make an impact on their lives. So I use all of that, you know, to fuel me and keep me going in this fight that is not easy, that is ultimately built upon trauma and tragedy, to keep me going and know that, like, there is a light at the end of this tunnel. I know there's a light at the end of this tunnel, and I will do whatever I got to do to make sure I pull us as far as we can go, you know, by myself. But it's not just me, you know, I have a whole community, an organization, a movement that's fighting right along with me.
Yes, yes. You're such an inspiration. And I so appreciate your willingness to share this reality that that it's day by day. And you gotta come back to the love, you gotta come back to what that fire is that's making you show up every day, but every day isn't gonna look the same. Nicole, I would love to hear your perspective on this question. And also, you know, as somebody who's a volunteer chapter leader, I'm curious what you see as the motivators of individuals who are willing to give their time. I want to make it clear to, you know, the folks who are listening in today, that this isn't a job for someone else. If you showed up today, you care about this issue. You likely are already organizing in some way. So I'm just curious of what you see and what keeps you going.
I like that everyone's talking about the intersectional nature of gun violence. I mean, we're a nation of gun violence survivors, where 59% of Americans have either been impacted or know someone that was impacted by gun violence. But you don't have to personally have been impacted. I was, but that isn't a flex that you need to have. There is no credibility in having been impacted by gun violence. All you need to bring to the table is that you care. Are you angry that Black Americans are 12 times more likely to be impacted by gun violence? Are you worried that 4.6 million children live in a home with an unsecured firearm? Are you upset about the absurd number of school shootings, or that's one of mass shootings or one of the things that are exceptional about our country? Whatever you bring to the table, you probably have skills that maybe you don't even know you have. You have skills either professionally or that you've cultivated in your home. Maybe you're great at organizing your family. Maybe you've always been fantastic on social media and you've built a following. You can come with any skill. And the whole goal is to appreciate and nurture your volunteers. And people do not need to come with expertise. You can just come with a fire in your belly and some outrage. That's all you need. We have the expertise, the research is available, the trainings are there. People will help you. Always look to other people with knowledge. Always look at the nature of gun violence in your community, because it changes everywhere. Where I live, homicides are more common than suicides, but that isn't the norm in America. Look at the communities most impacted by gun violence and speak to members of communities and look to the groups that are making a difference on the ground in those communities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for that too. Because again, we just want to drive home this point that there's no one way to show up for this incredibly important issue and what we want to do to change it. As Stephanie just said in the chat, it takes all of us, that's for sure. Representative Johnson, I want to ask a question of you, because I think as we talk about the importance of knowing that we can all play a role and we can't pretend this just happens at the federal level and there it is in DC and we don't have any reach there, so what are we gonna do? I'm curious what advice you have for our audience members in approaching their local and state elected officials. You know, you're sitting in that position. What is helpful for you to hear or to see that helps you ultimately advocate for these things that that can make change in the policy rooms?
Well, interestingly, it's for me, it's, you know, I want to know the facts, all the facts that everybody stated. That's what impacts me. And also, personal stories are always impactful. I mean, that is what really makes someone understand more deeply, when you understand how people who have been affected feel and what they've gone through. If you have seen, you know, students running down a hill to your classroom just screaming in terror after seeing something like this, it's something that will never, ever leave your mind. But, you know, it's someone who can personally tell that story is the best way to get people to understand. But when I tell people, it's really who the people you want to reach are my colleagues across the aisle. And so the best way to reach them is either when they're in session, you know, make an appointment to see them at the Capitol, or when we're back at home, make an appointment to see us at home. And I always tell people to go to their page on the Tennessee General Assembly website and familiarize yourself with some of the bills that they've passed and carried, and find something that they did that you liked, you know, and say, wow, I really, appreciate you for supporting Tennessee Promise so every child can go to college. You know, that was such an important bill in our state, you know. But then say, but what I'd really like to talk to you, my concern, you know, in the theme of education and community is gun violence. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of let them understand that you know something they've done that you liked. And then also meet with them like every 6 months. So that at six after session, we ended in April. I tell people to go and meet with them and say, you know, I'm really disappointed that you voted to drop the age to buy guns to 18. So the other thing that's really impactful for them is to know you're paying attention to their votes, because nobody really thought anybody was paying attention to their individual votes. And so if you drop a couple of votes, a vote you liked, a vote you didn't like, that makes them think, these people in my district are paying attention to how I'm voting. And continue to meet with them every 6 months and do that, and then advocate for the issues that you care about. It really will go a long way. And like I said, telling stories, one of the biggest ways that I saw a storytelling impact one of our legislators was a representative, very conservative representative, very anti-immigration, went to a high school in his district. And some of the students who were immigrants told their stories. And that really got started the tuition equality bill in Tennessee, because it made some people change their mind about how they thought about immigrants, especially immigrants who had gone to school in Tennessee for 5 to 10 to 12 years.
Yeah.
And making sure that they were able to pay the same college tuition as a student, other students in Tennessee who attended school here.
Yes.
So those personal stories are really just critical in talking to your legislators.
It's so, I'm so grateful for you sharing that, because it's sort of the side we don't hear enough, which is, you know, that level of, it's not just, it's like the constituent's voice, and us not feeling like that voice matters, and how much it really does matter, and how if you can carve out the minutes, the days, the time, whatever you have to give, how much that can influence ultimately, you know, a policy that is going to affect so many. I'm going to turn to audience questions soon just to keep the conversation going. Before I do so, though, I'd love to hear, Amber, from you on ways that you, if somebody's coming to the table, somebody's, and I know a number of folks who are in the audience today, may feel like an outsider on this issue. They may have a personal connection, but not know, with the limited time they have to give, where that time should go. Any words of advice for what you've seen on how community members can get involved in your role in community organizing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I will just, you know, shout out the wonderful work that March for Our Lives and Moms does, because they have chapters and just incredible leaders all over the country and almost in every single area of the country. I unfortunately am not a young person anymore, even though I feel as if I am a young person. But I know that that even if you are not a young person, March for Our Lives does incredible work. And I say, I'm not a mother, but Moms Demand Action does incredible work. And so I would say that you don't have to be, I guess, part of the their specific constituencies in their name to be involved. And I would say that for the work that I know I specifically do, and Ariel and other folks on here do around CVI and community violence intervention, there's people on the front lines every single day that are doing incredible work around, and I keep saying CVI, but community violence intervention. So like the work that is stopping homicides, that the people who are going out called frontline interventionists or violence interrupters are going out every single day, every single night, and intervening, making sure that like community beefs that are happening in major cities, even like cities like Austin, they're stopping violence before it starts. And we don't ever really hear about it on the news. They're not, you know, they're not asked to come and speak in front of city council and things like that, but they are my heroes. They are the people who are doing this work to keep all of our communities safe. So talking to them, I think in every single city I work in, and I think probably all of us on this call, we know who those folks are, and just finding ways to support them. The folks on the front lines, there's tons of survivor-led groups as well. And so I know I'm happy to, and I'm going to voluntold everybody else on here, all of the other groups that are on here, people that are speaking, I'm sure would be happy to connect everybody with existing groups? Because I think one of the things that's happened over the last couple of years is, I know I started my organization almost 7 years ago, and there's a ton of organizations. So don't reinvent the wheel. There's probably somebody in your local community who is already doing or working on the issues that we all care about. And so I would just say, if you're looking to get involved locally to do even things around, community-led organizing, please get in touch with your violence interrupter group. And so I'm happy to connect you with any of those groups that are doing it nationally or locally. And then the same thing with if you're looking to work at the state legislative level, tons of work that's happening there across the country in every state legislature. And then the same with city council. And so I think just getting in contact with the local leaders who are already doing the work. And then as I learned from my organizing days, you know, you will become the leader yourself, I'm sure, or start to organize in a different way. And so I know I just was contacted by somebody who's a physician and was like, physicians aren't doing enough. I want to start my own physicians group. I was like, great, let's do it. And so they're organizing physicians in their local community. And so lots of ways to be involved, but just looking to the people who are already doing the work, seeing if you can fit in there. And then if not, seeing how you can create something yourself or start your own volunteer organization would be great.
Amazing. And yes, please. I know I see it happening, though I can't track every word, that there's a lot of action happening in the chat. I would say for our panelists and for others who are participating, if there are sort of calls to action that you want to share, ways to sign up to get involved, please do share those. I have a question here that I'll put to the group, and we'll see who wants to step up to answer. From Ashley, I'm wanting to run for school board. I love this question. So somebody who's interested in running for school board, who cares about this issue specifically, what can a school board do to impact this issue? Would anybody like to share? Any of our panelists?
I want to jump in here because we're actually already working on something like this for March for Lives to engage young people. But just in general, school boards actually control a lot. I can only speak partially, like personally, from the experience that I have here in Texas. But in Texas, our school boards are pretty powerful. And as we're seeing triply across the country, how powerful school boards are with some of the laws that are being enacted. But from a school board standpoint, you can actually engage in a lot of the work that Amber was previously talking about. So the community violence interruption. It has been researched and proven that the presence of school resource officers actually do not make schools safer. They actually result in more people of color and minority groups being more likely to come in contact with law enforcement. And as we've sadly learned in the gun violence prevention space, that kind of like once you have that first record with the police, it kind of never stops. And so policing and school resource officers are not necessarily the most safest option. And then we've also seen that, you know, the myth that is put out there and has been carefully crafted by the gun lobby, that a good guy with a gun stops the bad guy with a gun. Unfortunately, I would like to tell them, talk to my friends in Uvalde, talk to my friends in Parkland, talk to my friends in Santa Fe, and they will say, your narrative that you're trying to push, that ain't 100% correct. So it is really about getting to the root causes of gun violence and understanding what is making this happen. And so as a school board member, you can push for including, instead of increasing the budget for more school resource officers, increasing the budget to have more school counselors, because guidance counselors do a wonderful job, but each guidance counselor is going to have at least 200 kids. So, you know, it's not realistic or fair to put all of that work, all of that monitoring and all of that responsibility on a school guidance counselor. So increasing funding for more school psychologists and therapists, and also creating a safer space for students who feel like they are not safe at home or not safe in their communities or see something that they want to report but don't necessarily know how to report it. Have a way to do that safely where they don't feel like they will be criminalized, where they don't feel like they will now be judged and it will get out to their peers that they, you know, told, you know, on what was going on, and just creating a safer environment for kids and for students and for teachers, quite frankly, to come there and voice their opinions. As I mentioned, my father's a teacher. I have talked with him about being armed before and what he thinks about that. And he's the biggest fan. You know, so teachers have a voice in this fight too. We work with the American Teachers Federation, NEA, a bunch of teachers unions all the time. And they talk about how, you know, they feel like it's time for teachers to now stand and say what they have to say, because they are just as impacted and just as invested in this fight as the rest of us are. So as a school board member, you can really be that ally on the school board that can speak and be a platform and amplify all these concerns and voices in a healthy way.
Yes. Oh, Ariel, thank you. And what I love about this is I feel like every single question that we have from the audience, we could dive into and have so many calls to action for people to understand how they can get involved. I want to make sure that we have Representative Johnson and then Nicole jump in on this question too. I know you both, thank you for raising your hands, by the way. Representative Johnson, why don't you go first?
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that what our school board would do, my particular school board member is in Nashville a lot, lobbying for the things that they care about, because there are a lot of attacks on public education, I'll just be honest. So, but they typically will write a resolution of support. And if that resolution passes at the school board level, then we know how our board members feel about that. And so when you think about it, these people are elected in districts almost as big as ours, and they are supporting this idea of common sense gun laws. So it can be powerful in the decision making of representatives that, well, every school board member in my area supports this. Perhaps I ought to think more deeply about what my vote's going to be.
Yes. Here. Absolutely. Okay, great. Nicole, did you want to add in?
Yes, actually. So you don't have to be a member of Moms Demand Action to take advantage of our resources. We are happy to provide and work with any group that would like to work with us. And I will say that we do have a program called Be Smart for Kids. It specifically targets parents of children, deals with safe storage, suicide awareness, and looking at gun violence in a number of ways, but it's specifically targeted to prevent young people from getting and vulnerable adults from getting access to unsecured firearms. It is currently in 8.6 million children in the United States are receiving Be Smart information directly through their schools. We do have sample proclamations we can give you. So everything is already there, and we're happy to work with absolutely any group, and all this information is free.
Oh, goodness. Thank you. Because we only have about 5 minutes left, is I am going to just name a couple of things that I'm seeing pop up in the questions. And there's so many questions that we can't get to. I'm sorry, y'all. We will have more conversations to come. But the reason I want to name them is in case any of our speakers in your closing remarks want to reference any of the things that I'm mentioning, or if there's a resource that you know of that you want to share in the chat, please, please do so. I'm seeing questions about, incredibly important questions about, you know, how do you host conversations in communities around this issue without sugarcoating the issue? So, you know, how can you hold effective trauma-informed discussions on gun violence? That question was from Annabella. It's such a great question. We also got a question about how do we talk about this with folks who want to intimidate us? That might be, you know, the naysayers who are going to show up to community discussions. That might be in your family when you're, you know, trying to change hearts and minds. Any tips that you have or where you can send folks on that? And, you know, when you have, and, you know, shootings are happening every day, but you have those moments like we recently had in Tennessee, what support, you know, I think this question is for you, Representative Johnson, but anyone can sort of speak to it too, is, you know, what support are you looking for from people who aren't directly impacted, who aren't right there? So I say all of that just in case there's some resource that anybody wants to share in the chat. I'm going to transition very quickly, very briefly to some housekeeping items, and then I'm going to have our speakers give closing remarks. I need to get to my so I don't mess up my housekeeping moments here. Okay, so four quick points that I want to hit before closing remarks. Number one, I invite you all to pay forward your participation and the next person's participation in events like this and programs that She Should Run offer. All of our programming is free to participants, but also we do our work and are able to do our work by the great support of individuals who donate to our organization, whether it's $3, $5, $20. There will be a link that Miriam is going to share. There it is. If you feel so moved, we greatly appreciate your support. Know that we're a 501c3 nonprofit. And our work is made possible because of you. Two, I know that at the start, Amanda mentioned it, there will be a survey. Surveys are incredible. We are a learning organization. Tell us what we can do better. We're going to keep hosting these conversations. Clearly, we have so much more to talk about here. Take the time, please, to fill out a survey. Three, just a simple thing you can do with the She Should Run community. We have a course called Building a Better Community. It's an email course. You take it. It's a great for the summer. You take it at your own pace. I encourage you, Miriam will post that link. It's an easy way to get involved in She Should Run and build your own path forward if that's something that you are so moved to do. And lastly, just a note that coming up as we continue having these incredibly important issue conversations, our next topic that will be in a similar format will be on reproductive health that we're doing in partnership with the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Justice. That's happening on June 21st. I encourage you to sign up if that's an issue that that is near to you. And with that, I would like to turn back to our speakers for quick closing remarks. And I just want to thank you on behalf of the She Should Run team for making the time to join us today. So we will start, why don't we start with Amber?
Thank you again for having me on here. And so I guess just in closing, I think everyone just put so many incredible resources. And so I will just say that you can show up however you want as a gun violence activist. You do not have to like be wearing a certain organization's t-shirt. You don't have to show up in person. You can show up online. And I think the one thing that gets me out of bed, but I think we all have in common, at least all of us as panelists, is that I know I believe that another world is possible than the one that we're living in right now. We shouldn't have our kids be scared to go to school, scared to have our kids go to school. We shouldn't be scared to go to the movie theater, the mall. And, you know, we're on the right side of history, no matter what your politics is in terms of this issue, just by you guys showing up today. I know there's other things that you could be doing right now. And so there's just a ton of ways for you to be involved. Please do not feel like this is a fatal cause. A lot of people feel that way whenever there isn't movement in your local community or this bill doesn't get passed or whatever happens. But think about what happened with Representative Johnson, how hard they had to fight and how we're just, you know, they'll probably say they're just getting started and they have so much more work to do, but it took a lot of time to get there. And so please don't feel defeated. If you want to talk to any of us about the work and what you can be doing locally, if you have a great idea, please, please do it. We need you in this fight. This fight is for everybody. It's all of our responsibilities. So thank you again for having me on.
Thank you. Ariel.
I'm going to try and keep it quick. Every time I say that, I go long. So I'm going to just try. I'm like, that's going to be my goal. First, I want to say thank you to everyone for joining us. Thank you, She Should Run Again, for inviting me to be on this panel. Echoing a lot of what Amber said, you don't have to show up in this movement thinking that you have everything together. I was a 20-year-old college student when I got involved with this movement that was just angry and sad. And sometimes that's all you need, like the need to want to do something, the understanding that there is a problem, but that there's also a solution. Gun violence, I will stand to this and stand on the square as long as I am working in this movement. It will not just take legislation to end this gun violence epidemic. It takes community power and community building. And so understanding that you have the power. You have the power to make a change. You have the power to make an impact. And making an impact on your community is just as important as a pace of national legislation, because your community is what is important to you. Your community is a part of a million other communities across this nation. So think about it. If we all make an impact in our community and we all mobilize and empower and engage all of our communities, that's how we make the change happen. You know, it's never going to be in this one fell swoop that we, legislated out and it's just done and we never have to think about it again. Like, it's going to take more than that, and it really takes the support of the community. So I would say getting involved in your community is a great way to start your work in this movement. Gun violence is not an issue that you can be an expert on unless you do research. I'm not an expert on gun violence. I just know people. And that's just kind of what I say. I just know people. And so don't feel like you have to come in with all the stats and all the information and all of, I know this person, and I know this person, I know this person. That doesn't matter. Just come there with your heart open, your mind ready, and all of the emotions that you have in you, whether that be sadness or anger or happiness or whatever, and let that fuel you and get you involved in this movement. And just understand that from a young person's perspective, it's going to take all of us. One thing that I've learned specifically in this fight, especially because I live in a state where, you know, they don't necessarily agree with what I'm doing and like what I'm fighting for, is that this issue, though it's become a partisan one, it is a human, we are dealing with a human rights crisis like no other. And I think that's what people need to understand, is that regardless, that like gun violence does not determine, hey, did you vote? Of which way did you vote? Where do you live? What's your socioeconomic status? How do you identify? It doesn't stop when a gun comes out of a bullet, when a bullet comes out of a gun, it doesn't like have go through the stop process and determines who they want to hit based off of arbitrary comments. Gun violence is indiscriminate, and it impacts everyone. And that's the way that I personally interact with people that don't necessarily agree with my issue or that have a different perspective, is that, do you like people dying? No. Well, that's the easy common ground. It's understanding that that's what we're all fighting for. We're fighting to make all of our communities safer, and we're fighting for us to all have a safer, more equitable life and not have to worry about going to the grocery store or the movie theater or school or to the park or whatever, that we can just live and be safe and live life in the way that we want to. Yes. So, yeah.
Thank you, Ariel. Nicole?
Well, I think the other panelists echoed a lot of my thoughts, which is there's no one right way to come to this movement. There's lots of great groups on the ground doing the work. Really, what's important is there's a place for everybody. And what you need to know is listen to the people most impacted by gun violence. Listen to people's stories. People want to be heard. People want to be recognized. There's so many people impacted. And as far as politics, there's so many ways to get involved. It's great for people to run for office. We certainly need more women running for office. But even if it's as simple as saying, I know right here from Maryland, I can volunteer my time for Rep. Johnson's reelection campaign because I can text bank right from the comfort of my home in pajamas. So there's 100 ways that we can get involved, and there's a path for absolutely everybody. But what's really important is that we choose to get engaged in. We decide not to sit on the sidelines.
Beautiful. Representative Johnson, you can close
us out. I'm just so excited that this movement is growing and building, and so many people have reached out to Tennessee since we had our little incident that we had at the end of session. And it's just amazing to see, you know, we're trying to build this multiracial, multigenerational, also multi-partisan. The last probably 10 days of session, there was a group of women every single day at the Capitol that had their signs, Republicans for Gun Sense.
Yeah.
So it's really captured all of the different groups and all of the organizing groups like Equity Alliance and Planned Parenthood, and you know, everybody is getting engaged in this issue. And it's just critical. You know, we know, as it's been said on here with Amber, Ariel have addressed the much larger impact in Black communities. You know, that is so critical that we're all fighting on this together. And we came through a session that was pretty tough. And now I can say that Rep. Pearson and Rep. Jones and I, we have a lot of hope for what's coming. It's because of this coalition that has been built. And it's because the young people are so smart and they're so passionate, and they are not stopping. Just yesterday, they were at the Capitol. They're coming every Wednesday until the special session. And a precious young man drew a poster, and I told him he could hang it on my door. I talked to him on FaceTime because I wasn't in my office, but he put that sign on my door. They're maintaining this movement. They're building this movement. And we just have so much hope that we're going to actually get to see something done.
Oh, you all give me chills. This conversation has been so important. I'm so grateful for your time. For all of you, just a quick close here. All the gratitude to these incredible leaders on this call today. And if gun violence is something that's driving you or someone in your life to make change, there are so many ways you can get involved that have been talked about here. Also, we encourage you to stay connected with She Should Run so that your voice can show up in the policymaking wherever it is that you may or may not have started in that journey. So thank you everybody for your time, and we look forward to conversations to come.